Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, we'll discuss the Delta Airlines crash in Toronto last Monday, how all 80 people got out alive and why, plus our airport, known for its interesting art pieces, is getting more culture. Those stories and more next in the news.
In our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:22, we talk about the importance of middle names. Passports, air tickets, middle names can get you in trouble. We'll tell you how to avoid the hassles.
How in the world could you travel the planet for $75 a day? The author of an updated book joins us with some legit tips on how to save some big dollars on the road at 11:35.
And at 11:45, Mark digs into the Travel Guys mailbag to answer some of your questions. Great information to help you on the road.
If this is your first time discovering our program, welcome. If you're a regular listener, thanks for coming along. You're listening to The Travel Guys.
On the road again.
Welcome, my friends, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys with Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, proudly brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for coming along. Well, it's a beautiful Saturday, and, speaking of wonderful weather, sunshine, and it's baseball season. And to Mark Hoffman and the people at Sports Leisure Vacations, who've made it a pretty much a lifelong mission to not miss spring training. Mark, what you going to be doing here for the next few days?
Well, off to Palm Springs for a few days, and then home for a couple days, and then you hit the nail right on the head there, down to Phoenix to catch some spring training. It's kind of an annual thing with Sports Leisure. We don't take a big group to spring training every year. It's, you know, a dozen, 15, 20 people. I think maybe I had 25 one year. So it's not in the profit realm. It's not the most profitable trip we run, but because the owner of the company likes baseball, and when I discovered this a number of years ago, we went to spring training. We actually sat in folding chairs at the Giants' old ballpark in Scottsdale.
Wow!
And the tickets were $3. You sat right down behind home plate, literally in old folding chairs, folding chairs. Now this year we're paying as much as $75. For a spring training game. And keep in mind, these are games that don't count. They don't count.
No.
So, I mean, to get people to pay that kind of money to come to a game that doesn't count, it's a big industry in Arizona and Florida. You got all these major league teams playing and all these people coming out and eating and drinking. And, of course, they're kind of on vacation, so they're eating and drinking in the morning and in the afternoon and in the evening. And it's big money to these places as the baseball teams get ready for the upcoming season. So there is nothing as good as baseball in the sun in spring training.
You know, I had a good friend, and a lot of folks here may remember Lou Coppola. Lou, he had a vacation home there in Arizona, not too far from the parks. He had a car that was there. And, I mean, that's how important spring training and baseball was to Lou. And I imagine there are a lot of people. You know, it wasn't just a vacation. I mean, it was a part of a lifestyle. So, well, enjoy. I'm sure you guys will have a great time.
It's nice of you to mention Lou. Lou and his wife, Betty, were Sports Leisure travelers.
Yeah.
And they were a big – Lou was the consummate radio man, I'll tell you what. He really was. I mean, you've been doing this for a long time yourself. Lou was a lifer when it came to radio. Yes, off to Palm Springs and spring training, but first we have this little radio show we got to do.
We do, and at the top of this little radio show, as a rule, we bring you up to date on what's going on in the travel news. And with the travel news, as always, Mark, what have you rounded up for us today?
Well, if you are an Expedia customer, if you're a person who books your travel on Expedia-owned websites, including Hotwire, Orbitz, and Travelocity, Southwest Airlines, which before, up until now, you had to go to the Southwest site to book Southwest tickets, no more. You will be able to book Southwest tickets on Expedia starting very, very soon. Aligning with Southwest strategy to reach a broader audience, of course, with when you every time you cut somebody else in a piece of the pie, then that means that piece of the pie has to come from somewhere. So there goes a couple $3 on Southwest. Always lower airfares, because when you've got to cut other people in on the take, why, then that's what's going to happen. So anyway, if you're an Expedia person, you can go right there and buy your Southwest tickets now. Let's talk a little bit about that Delta Airlines crash in Toronto on Monday. Bizarre to say the least. It was snowing. The plane ended up upside down. Everybody now, I think, knows the basic facts. But a couple of things that I'd like to talk about here. One was the ability of the seat belts to withstand the incredible forces. If you've heard about people talking about this, and Tom, I'm sure you have, these folks, basically when the plane stopped, they were hanging by seat belts upside down in the airplane.
And these are airplane lap belts, my friends, not the kind of seat belt you have in your automobile over the shoulder. That's also amazing.
Imagine trying to figure out, you're upside down in an airplane, you've just gone through all of this trauma, you know you've got to get out really quickly, and the only way to get out, to release yourself, I mean, I don't know how with all that pressure on the belt, you got to get the belt released and not fall on the floor and get going, I mean, and get off the plane. A couple of things that strike me about this whole situation. I mean, first of all, it's kind of a miracle that all those people got off the plane. I know a few were hospitalized, but everybody lived to tell about it. Couple of things. One is, as you noted, Tom, we were talking before we went on the air here about people who seemed to be carrying stuff off with them off the plane. When they got off the upside down plane and got to the exit door and made their way out, they're carrying their carry-on luggage across mm-hmm. the tarmac. In the snow, on an airplane that, you know, was just on fire until the fire trucks got there a couple seconds ago. Some of the people even had the foam on their body, on their clothing and stuff like that. What some people don't know and wasn't shown in any of the tape that I saw was that the leftover fuel reignited about a minute after those people got off the aircraft. So the reality is that if they'd have taken much longer to get off the plane, somebody might not have gotten off the plane. Folks, I mean, hopefully none of us, nobody listening to this will ever be in a situation like that, I hope. But the one thing you've got to keep in mind is, forget the carry-on luggage. Forget it. If it took them, what did it take them, 6 minutes or 8 minutes to evacuate? It took a while to evacuate that plane. I saw it somewhere. My apologies for not having it in front of me here. But anyway, the point is, the FAA says that we can evacuate these full-size planes in 3 or 4 minutes that are full. We've all known that was baloney for a long time. This proves it. This was a plane with 80 customers, and it took longer than that, and the doors were open, and people basically could get off the plane once they got out of the seatbelt and walked on the ceiling of the plane to get off. So leave the carry-on. Leave everything behind. Just get your butt off the airplane. You know, I mean, all that stuff can be replaced. We haven't figured out how to replace people quite yet.
It was stunning. It really was. I think everybody is looking at this and thinking about what if it was me? And here again, since we talk about it quite frequently about emergency exiting and leave your stuff behind, it was stunning to see people pushing their little carry-on luggage through the snow that they had retrieved. And I don't even know how they did that, seeing that I'm not familiar with
the carry-ons were on the floor, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. That's it. Yeah, yeah. They're at your feet, and they were able to take the time to go and get it. I would be too stunned to even think about my carry-on. I'd just be looking for the exit.
You would hope that that would be your first thing, is to go for the exit. The other thing here that really needs to be mentioned, I ride on planes all the time. Do I listen to what the flight attendants have to say when they're giving the safety talk? No, I really don't. If I'm sitting in an exit row or next to an exit row, I want to listen to, because the different doors have different ways of opening them. Some of them have a strap, some have a handle. I want to know how to open that door if I'm sitting close to it. But most of the time, even though I'm a veteran flyer and I know the importance of this, I don't pay any attention. And I will just tell you that, you know, the flight crew, they're all heroes, because if you even see the tape that some people got on their phones and stuff, they were right there helping people off the plane. They were the last ones off. I mean, they absolutely did their job to the nth degree. And to some extent, people followed their instructions. But my goodness, folks, what those people have to tell you when you get on the plane about getting off the plane if there's an emergency is fairly important stuff. And you're not going to need it very often. But on this one flight, on this one day when no one had any idea they would need to be able to follow those people, you know, they're trained to do more than just serve you a cup of coffee, you know, or something out of the buy on board box. I mean, it really is important to listen to what they have to say. And if you're not going to listen to them, at least be quiet so that other people can listen to them. Because what Amen. That person in the row in front of you does in an emergency might determine whether or not you get off the airplane.
Very true. Very true. Good advice.
Yeah. All right. Moving on down the road here a little bit. U.S. Department of Transportation announces new air traffic controller hiring plan. They plan to supercharge the hiring of new air traffic controllers to try to ease the staff shortage. As part of the new plan announced by the DOT, they are going to opening a hiring window to become an air traffic controller from last Thursday through March the 17th. The program is going to change the 8-step hiring process to a 5-step process. Doesn't look like they're eliminating anything here that would be concerned with safety, but the idea is just to get people qualified a little bit quicker. It's been 10 years that we've been talking about air traffic controller shortages. We're down about 20% over what we need. Of course, the Trump administration announced a hiring freeze in January when the president took office. They actually fired some FAA employees, not air traffic controllers, hypothetically. But so now we're retracing our steps a little bit here, and perhaps we will get some emphasis on hiring air traffic controllers so that we won't have situations where 3 controllers are in doing the work of 5, or one is doing the work of 2, or something like that. My dad was an air traffic controller, and he always used to talk about that, about how they never had enough help. And gosh, that was 30, 40 years ago. So this is not something that just popped up, you know, recently. We really need to have enough people in those control towers. Tom, do you remember something called Super Shuttle? Remember those blue vans?
Yeah. They came out of Sacramento International Airport to come to your neighborhood, pick you up, take
when
you to the airport.
When was the last time you saw one?
I haven't.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Super Shuttle is kind of reinventing themselves. They are live in 80 cities around the country, and one of them is Sacramento.
Good.
So you have a choice between Uber and Lyft. I live out near Sunrise and Highway 50. Last time I took an Uber to the airport, it was $73. I looked up what Super Shuttle would be the other day, and it was $88. So reasonably competitive. But anyway, one more thing, if you're not an Uber or a Lyft fan for whatever reason, or you're just looking for other options, places to compare prices, a Super Shuttle is operating in Sacramento and can get you to the airport. They also can get you to other places. Supershuttle.com is where you can find them. Our own airport here in Sacramento, you know, we have the rabbit in the old rabbit in the new terminal.
Right.
The leaping rabbit, and we have those amazing piles of old suitcases in the old terminals.
Mm-hmm. One of mine is there.
Some more beautiful art is coming to, perhaps not as thematic, but some more beautiful art is coming to, it's a $2 million investment, in 3 permanent art installations as part of Sacramento International Airport's expansion. The artwork will be featured in the new pedestrian walkway. So this sounds kind of cool. And you would say, wow, it's wasting money on art. But, you know, when people arrive in a city and stuff like that, the airport is their first impression. So there's nothing wrong with having – do you know, we have one of the best airports in the country. We have more room. It's spacious. I mean, the parking situation is going to be a catastrophe for another year till they get the garage built. But really and truly, when you look at space for people and things like that, space on the concourses, really in Sacramento, we have as good a situation as anybody. I was just in a few Hawaiian airports a couple weeks ago, and my goodness, those – airports were built a long time ago when there were a lot fewer people flying to and from and around the islands. And so it reminded me how lucky we are in Sacramento to really have what is really a nice airport. JetBlue has announced, JetBlue Vacations specifically, has announced a rain reimbursement program for travelers. You can now buy rain insurance if you are buying a vacation with JetBlue that includes your airfare and your hotel. They will sell you rain insurance so that if your part of your or all of your vacation is ruined by heavy rains, then you will get a partial refund. They had in this article, they did not define what heavy rains are. That would be interesting.
Do they define how much for rain?
I was just going to touch on that.
Okay.
Most of these insurance things, especially these, I'll call them exotic insurance things, that are sold by the people who are selling the product to you, are worthless. They're a profit center. So if you feel like you need that protection, why go ahead? But just know that the airline would not be doing this if they paid out $15 for every 10 they took in.
Right.
So it's a profit center for them. And if you want to buy vacation insurance about the weather, that's fine. But read the fine print first, because heavy rain might have a specific definition to it, like how much rain falls in a 24-hour period or something like that. You want to make sure that your idea of heavy rain and their idea of heavy rain is the same. All right, here's kind of a cute thing. This has nothing to do with travel, I don't think. But this is from our folks from Wallet Hub, who put out lists. California is the second most sinful state in the country. We are 10th when it comes to anger and hatred, 10th in jealousy, 11th in greed, 4th in lust, 2nd in vanity, and 21st in laziness, which gets us to an overall rank of 2nd. We are very vain and lustful people, at least according to the people at Wallet Hub. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom. Speaking of the Travel Guy special still reigns supreme at our favorite place to eat.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what?
What?
Time out. Time out. I went to Rudy's the other night. I went to Rudy's. I got a to-go order at Rudy's.
Yes.
A halibut dinner and you know what a halibut dinner came with.
Clam chowder.
You betcha. So I just want to tell people that even if you don't have time to eat at Rudy's, you can. I was just happened to be in the neighborhood, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go to Rudy's and get a halibut dinner and some clam chowder to go. The halibut is just amazing there. The food is wonderful. They were, and see, they didn't know that I was like the travel guy. You know, I just went in. I'm a guy off the streets, and I'm ordering to go and stuff. Man, I'll tell you what. They think of everything. When I got home, I had dinner napkins in the to-go bag. You know, regular napkins, but dinner napkins. And the food was yummy.
Excellent. Well, thanks for sharing that. Yeah, you can get the Travel Guy special for $29.95 with all the fixings for to go as well. Mm-hmm. That's a great story, Mark. During COVID, I did a lot of Rudy's pickup, and they're just excellent. I know this doesn't have anything to do with food, but you mentioned their napkins. You could use them for shower towels.
They're big.
They're so robust.
I took all the food out and I ate, and I saw these napkins laying on the counter, and I'm like, what are these? And I realized what they were. Anyway, Rudy's Hideaway, just off Highway 50 at Hazel Avenue. Tell them the Travel Guys sent you.
Here we are to make you a smarter traveler. Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano, the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Mark, we promised folks we would talk a little bit about the importance of your middle name when it comes to travel. Let's get to it.
This is really a thing that involves international travel more than domestic. But the key is you want to make absolutely certain middle names can be a hang-up. This actually came from one of our mailbag questions. Somebody asked about – they got stopped by a TSA official because they had their initial on their ticket and their full name on their ID. And the TSA guy just gal pointed out to him that, gee, you know, really these should be the same. This isn't going to keep you from getting on an airplane domestically, but internationally it would keep you from traveling. So it's got to be the same. So particularly if you're buying an international airline ticket, take out your passport. Whatever your name is on your passport, exactly that's what should be on your international ticket. So, you know, I'm Mark Allen Hoffman, so I can't be Mark A. Hoffman. or Mark Hoffman. If my passport says Mark Allen Hoffman and this exact spelling, and my name has two F's and two N's in it, the spelling has to be exactly the same. The middle name has to be exactly the same. You can't skip it on one and put it on the other or not, or have a middle initial. It's really critical. Like I said, domestically, this TSA guy was doing her a favor by telling her that, you know, this is something that you need to be, because it used to be that at TSA that would hang you up. Now the technology is better. They can identify who you are, and that's all they're really concerned about. But on an international trip, you have to make absolutely certain that it matches. And rather than take out your driver's license and try to have it match your license because you're going to present that at the TSA booth, no. The passport is the thing that it has to match. So when you're buying an international ticket, this is also important if you're going on a cruise and you're going to make some international ports of call along the way, and at some point you might have to present your ID. Who knows what could happen out there on the road that might make you have to identify yourself in a spot. So you want your travel documents and your passport to have exactly the same name. And the middle name is where a lot of people get hung up.
Yeah. You know, when you get a pre-check, much like a passport, it's real specific as to what your full name. And then it has to match. And at that point, you get accustomed to using your full name. What happens? I mean, how much can they hang you up? Can they refuse to let you on board?
Yes, yes. And internationally, customs and the like, it's entirely possible that you be sent home or not allowed to board the aircraft or whatever it is that you're, you know, ship or whatever it is that you're boarding. So this is something that seems like a really little tiny thing, but it's a really important thing. The middle name, if you're traveling internationally, needs to match exactly what it is on your passport. Just don't even worry about anything else. Take out your passport when you're buying your air ticket, and that's the way your name should be, especially if you're a junior or the third or something like that. Back, we mentioned that Sports Leisure Vacations had a trip to Japan coming up this spring. Indeed, it leaves on the 21st of May. Japan for the culturally curious, 11 days in Japan. And I asked a staff member here at the office, why would you go to Japan? She was the one who put the trip together. And she said, it's all about the people. She said, the Japanese people are the most polite, gracious, and courteous people anywhere on the planet, and everything is amazingly clean in Japan, everywhere. She said, even when you're in a densely populated city like Tokyo, it doesn't feel crowded. Actually, it's very orderly. So the food is amazing. She said, they can even make fake food in a window look good. And also, Donnie told me, oh yeah, can't forget to mention that the American dollar is doing really well against the yen. So big help there. If you are somebody who has Japan on your bucket list, give us a call at Sports Leisure Vacations or go to sportsleisure.com. Check out all the information for this trip to Japan. In May, we have two seats remaining. So if you are a single traveler or have a roommate or a husband or a wife, come on along with us to Japan in May.
Hey there, it's Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for coming along. And as promised, we were going to visit with a gentleman who penned a book that may make it possible for you to travel, because it's entitled How to Travel the World on $75 a Day, which at a glance seems pretty much impossible. But Matt Kepnes, who penned this, is going to chat with us for a while, and maybe we'll figure out how to do that. Matt, welcome to the Travel Guys.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here and talk travel.
This is an update of your book, is that correct?
Yes. So this book originally came out in 2013. It was called How to Travel the World on $50 a Day. And the last edition came out in 2017. But I wanted something to really reflect the current conditions travelers face when trying to save money on the road, so I updated it.
Matt, as a tour operator, I know that touring costs $500-$600 a day if you're not staying in too luxurious of a hotel. Cruising is a lot more expensive than it used to be. I was looking at river cruise pricing the other day as a possible destinations for my travelers next year, and my goodness, the price of river cruising in the United States has even gotten a lot more expensive. So I point at you and say $75 a day.
Holy cow. So this is your opportunity to tell us a little bit about, tell us a couple of your secrets, not all of them, but a couple of your secrets that might allow people to travel for such an inexpensive amount of money.
That's true. The price of travel has really gone up in the last few years. But this book is really geared to the long-term traveler. So that $75 a day is geared to like the person doing an around the world trip. That said, we all, whether or not we're going on a river cruise or an around the world trip or just a place for 2 weeks, we all get on the same planes, we eat the same food. And so the tips in this book can really be applied to anybody looking to get value. So looking for cheap flights, the best travel insurance companies, how to save money on attractions in Rome, that kind of stuff. So it's really like, don't get caught up in the number. If you're not traveling the world, there's tips in here to really help you too.
Be specific and give us a couple of them that are a couple of your favorites.
Yeah. Three tips I like to tell folks is, first, be flexible. There are always travel deals going on throughout the year. So as long as you're flexible with either when you go or where you go, you're going to find a deal. The difference of a day can be the difference of hundreds of dollars. And so as long as you have an open mind, you can find a deal. Second, I would recommend use points. You'll collect credit card points as long as you can pay off your bill each month. Because you can use those for free hotels and free airfare, and that will save you a lot of money. Third, travel like you live. Day to day, you don't eat fancy meals. You don't take private Ubers everywhere. You walk. You just lounge around. You go to cafes. You go to the local market. You go grocery shopping. Do those same things when you're in destinations around the world. Locals don't spend a ton of money in their day-to-day life, just like you don't. And so as long as you like travel like you live, go to the local market, go grocery shopping, cook some food, use public transportation, lounge around, you can really lower your costs. And I'll add another one, corollary on that, is also go to the local tourism office. And that office is staffed by people who live in the destination and know how to navigate around without spending a lot of money. So they can tell you, these places are free, or we're having a free festival, or this museum is discounted on this day, or eat here. This is where we eat after work, not where the tourists eat.
Wow, that's some legitimate information, Tom, because when people go out on the road, with us, the types of things that Matt is talking about, go to the local market, eat in the local cafe, things like that. It's a little tougher when you're traveling in tow with 25 people, but it can be done. And those are the kinds of things I think that people are looking for when they're traveling. Don't you think, Tom?
Absolutely. By the way, if you're just joining us, our special guest is Matt Kepnes. His book is How to Travel the World and on $75 a Day. Matt, one of the things that came to mind was when I've traveled, there's always people looking to try to give you stuff, okay? And it usually comes with a caveat. It comes with having to spend 2-3 hours or more at a timeshare presentation so that you can get several hundred dollars in stuff, whether it's tickets to amusement parks or whatever it might be. I haven't had a chance to read your book yet, but do you address that, or do you just stay away from those things? Because in the long run, it'll cost you a lot more.
I don't address those things because my view on that is, just stay away. If you're going somewhere for a couple of weeks, you have so much to do anyway. Why waste 3 hours of your life for a couple of $100 and tickets, and the high stress sales tactics? Just go enjoy your trip.
Matt, you mentioned in your book about getting off the beaten track, which oftentimes, the restaurants and things that are on the tourist boulevard, those people pay, those vendors pay a lot more money for rent, so their prices are naturally higher. And oftentimes, if you get off the beaten track, you can find things that's really where you'll find not only value, but also the kind of people that will make your travels more interesting. Do you have a particular off the beaten track place that you really enjoy that you could share with our listeners?
Well, if you're looking for a destination that's really off the beaten path, I love Taiwan. Not a lot of people go there. It just doesn't get a lot of hype, but it is an incredibly affordable destination. The food is amazing. There's lots of like mountains you can go hiking in. There's famous tea areas around. If you go south, there's like tropical beaches. So like it really checks a lot of boxes for an affordable destination that where you won't see a lot of other tourists.
Matt Kepnes is the man who wrote Travel the World on $75 a Day. And Matt, I have to tell you, Jared, just in the brief few minutes that we've had together, you have some pretty solid ideas. The one about going to the local tourist office is really an outstanding idea. Something that those are people that as a tour operator I work with on a regular basis. But as an individual tourist, people wouldn't think of doing something like that. And those people absolutely hold the keys to the kingdom. Some of the things that you were talking about, telling you where to go, local festivals, there's a farmer's market on this day or that day, or, here's something that's under construction. And boy, if you've got a rental car, you really want to avoid this area. So Travel the World on $75 a Day. We will put a link to Matt's book at travelguysradio.com. If you have some interest, I'm going to check it out. I recommend that maybe you do too. Matt, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's great talking to you.
Fascinating. It looks like it's going to be fun reading, but I just don't even think it's a real thing, to be honest with you. I can't do anything for $75 a day.
I will read it and report back.
Okay. Welcome, it's Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, into our final segment for today's show. By the way, you can find information to make you a smarter traveler always at travelguysradio.com, as well as an opportunity to listen to Travel Guys podcasts, available going back quite a ways. So if you want to listen to some old shows or some new shows, they're right there waiting for you. Okay, Mark, are you ready to answer some questions on travel?
I'm ready.
Okay, this is what you do, isn't it, travel?
It is what I do, yes, sir. All over the place.
All right, my friends, let's start with our first question from Lucille in Rockland. She writes, travel's become such a hassle with all the chats and bots and write to us because you don't want to talk to you. She said she's discouraged, and like a lot of folks, just getting a question answered by a real person has become pretty hard. Now, do these sellers of travel products know that their methods are driving people away?
Yeah, the most discouraging one is, here, fill out this form online and we'll get back to you and answer your question or whatever it is. And it's amazing. Sometimes I fill those things out online and I've got $1,000 or $2,000 worth of business for somebody because I've got a group. And they don't answer me either. So don't feel discouraged. It's to me, this has become a matter of saving money versus customer service. And I suspect that in another 10 years, we won't be having this discussion. The reason we're having it now is because we still have people around who remember customer service. And slowly but surely, younger people in our society are becoming accustomed to the fact that customer service is very different than it used to be. Yes, you print your own baggage tag when you go to the airport. And yes, you go into McDonald's and you punch your order in on the screen. And you put your credit card in. You don't talk to anybody. And when your number comes up, they call it and you walk up to the counter and get your food. So to younger people, and by younger, I mean, under, let's say, 45, 50, technology is intuitive. And the people who design technology and design these systems are more looking at that greater number of people. So the older you are, the more frustrated you are likely to get with all of this travel stuff. Chris Elliott, though, I asked Chris about this, and Chris said, tell people to go to my website, because at Elliott.org, two L's and two T's. He said, because the reason I have that is for free, they can find there the executives of all these companies to write to. So if you can't get your question answered or you've got a complaint about something, go there and send it off to the people on that list. And he says it's really rare that people don't get some kind of response within a few days, even if it's a boilerplate response. Somebody at least responds to them. So that's one thing to do. If you can't get your questions answered, that's what you can try. But another thing to do is go call the 800 number. Just keep saying agent or representative And at some point in time, you should get to one of those people. What's really frustrating is when a chat bot or, you know, online asks you, did that answer the question? And you say no. And then the chat bot says, asks you the same thing all over again. So it's like, are you not paying attention to me or not listening? All of this has to evolve a little bit. It's very frustrating. All I can say to Lucille and Rockland is, you are not alone. You are not alone. And when you get companies that answer their own phone, if you're trying to set up an attraction somewhere, you're calling a hotel with a question, they answer their phone and they have time to talk to you, you should make note of that, because that's a company that somebody has consciously made the decision to spend more money on customer service. If they're spending more money on customer service over the phone, there's a pretty good chance they're spending more money on customer service on the site. So I would take that. I would take poor customer service over the phone as something to be very wary of.
All right. Good answer. All right. By the way, we're doing the Travel Guys mailbag, and our next question is about the infamous airport parking. This listener writes that you're always reminding us to get to the airport early to deal with the parking issues. Well, would you go over the tips one more time for us? Because I got to the airport in the afternoon the other day, and there was plenty of space. Wondering what was the problem.
Well, I can tell you what the problem, why there was plenty of space. It's February, or maybe January, and not as many people are traveling. Also, there are some flights that don't operate in the off-season, so there are fewer flights at the airport. Not a lot, but a few. Fewer flights, so those are all people who don't need parking places. Also, the flights aren't as full, so that's why you're finding space at the airport that you wouldn't have found otherwise. Give it a month, wait till spring break, and that'll all change. It's funny, I go out there in the airport, sometimes we're on the 515 to Denver in the morning on United, and so I've got a group and folks that I've got to meet, so I'm at the airport at 3 o'clock, and when you pull in at 3 o'clock, you can park way up close in the daily lot, because nobody has come yet for the day. People have left from the night before, and there are empty spaces. If I have a 8 o'clock flight group going out, I have to be at the airport at 5:45. Now those really up-close spaces and those ground floor slots in the parking garage are gone, and you're starting to move further out. I always take it as a tip as to where on the ground, on the daily lot, where the spaces are open. I watch the people who are walking in, and I watch where they're coming from. Because if there were spaces open much closer to the front, those people would have parked in them. And the fact that they're walking from the middle of the daily lot, that's my spot, is the daily lot, because there's a shuttle bus and I don't have to prepay. And if I need the shuttle, otherwise I can walk into the airport. So it's the tips are get there early. Allow your whatever you think you need at the airport, give yourself an extra 20 minutes so that when you get there and you have to park in a lot way out in Timbuktu, and you have to pay in advance, and you have to wait for the shuttle bus, that you're not having to run over everybody else when you get inside. So there are a lot of options for parking at the airport. The later in the day you go, the fewer options there will be until you get to 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And then there will be more options because people have come in and left the parking lot, if that makes sense to you. And the other thing is, later in the week that you get, the it's tougher parking will get. Tuesday and Wednesday are traditionally light travel days. So by the time you get to Thursday or Friday, the parking in the lot is going to be a little tougher. Go 20 minutes early. That'll solve the problem.
There you go. I love this question. When is a window seat not a window seat? I paid extra for an upgraded seat on an American Airlines flight recently. I love to look out the window while we're flying, and a lot of folks do. But when I boarded the plane, there was no window at my seat. It was the only window seat on the plane without a window. Shouldn't the airlines have had told me that that window seat doesn't have a window? Why would they call it a window seat if it doesn't have a window?
Well, they don't actually. I looked online, and they don't actually call them window seats. They just, you know, it's the seat that's where the next to where the window would be. And there is one model of Airbus that does not, has one row where there is not a, where there's a seat and no window. And the person who wrote this is absolutely right. Shouldn't the airline in some way tell them if they're charging you extra to sit? in a place where a window would be.
Right.
If there's no window there, should they tell you there's not a window? The answer, of course, is yes. They should tell you there's no window there. And perhaps that one doesn't cost quite as much. But imagine your disappointment. You've paid, and this windowless seat is just in front of the exit rows on American Airlines aircraft. So it's in the section where you would pay a little extra for extra legroom. So imagine you've gotten a seat and you paid extra for it because you love to look out the window. And some people, that's all they do when they're on the plane. And some people don't want to be on the window because they don't want to look out. And imagine getting on the airplane and looking forward to that, which I know some people do, and then there's no window. So, yes, the airline should tell you. Also, I'm going to suggest to you that if you wrote to the airline and told them your problem and were nice about it and asked kindly, they might either refund you what you paid extra for that seat or give you enough miles that might in some way compensate you. Airlines are not big on giving money, but they are big in throwing away worthless currency, also known as air miles. So that might be something that you could – I certainly would ask.
We are Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys. We're doing the Travel Guys mailbag. My partner and I want to cruise to Alaska this summer, but most of the cabins in the ships are already taken. How far in advance do I need to book my cruise to get a decent choice of cabins, Mark?
Well, you know, in the past, I would have said 6-8 months. If you were going to cruise in the fall of this year, this would be about the time that you'd be looking in order to have a good selection of cabins. The cruise ships, however, have told us that business is really good. They have a season where they really promote the heck out of their cruises, which is January, February, and the cruise lines are telling us that they really didn't have to do that this year because the ships are already reasonably full. So if you're asking me when you should, I would have used to have told you 6 to 8 months. Cruise lines are now, most of them have got their 2026 schedules out. Some of them are starting to talk about 2027 because that's how busy they are and how popular cruising is. So I would tell you as soon as the information is available from the cruise line that you want to cruise on, then I would get busy. Also, don't in the cruise industry right now, there are not going to be a whole lot of – we used to tell people, you know, if you're not picky about where you go and when you go, wait for last-minute discounts. But not so much now because last-minute discounts are just not part of things because they are – the ships are full.
Good point. Okay, we got time for not really a travel question, but just kind of a travel's heads up about electric cars on the road, right, Mark?
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a listener who wrote in and said, just a heads up to your listeners, outside of California, charging stations for your electric vehicle can sometimes be hard to find, not convenient, and expensive. I strongly recommend you scope out charging stations before you leave home. Would have saved a lot of time and stress for me. Also, with hotels, always ask what the hotel charges to use the electric charging station. I communicated with the person who sent this question in, and they shared with me a couple of stories, which was one at 9 o'clock at night, the only charging station at the hotel was being used, and so they had to go and find a charging station somewhere else and then stay with the car because they were out of town. And it was in a shopping center parking lot. They didn't want to leave the car there and go back and get it in the morning. So it was really a hassle for them. This lady related to me that at one hotel, they wanted $80 for the charging station for overnight. So that was kind of scary too. So if you have an electric vehicle, you need, follow the wisdom here, go online, find out where the charging stations are before you travel.
That wraps up another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Mark and Tom with you. Thanks for coming along, my friends. Final word, Mark.
Remember to dance like nobody's watching. We'll see you next Saturday at 11 o'clock.
The traveler is always.